sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets weigh central bankers. Bond route finally coming to an end. Earnings season definitely at an end, and we have a great guest today, Paul Godsmark. He's with the Canadian Automated Vehicle Center of Excellence, and we're talking all about automated and driverless vehicles. All this and much more on episode number 414 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And a happy Memorial Day to you. This is Andrew Horowitz. It is now May 24th. 2015, coming to the end of a lot of things, coming to the end of earnings season. Definitely, we'll talk a little bit about that. What's going on, the scorecard for companies that are making the grade in terms of earnings and doing well throughout this earnings season, and some of the ideas of what to look forward to in the next coming earnings season, and possibly reflections on what the markets may think, considering the fact that the central banks these days are one hand in, one hand out. It's kind of like the hokey pokey. We got the U.S. Central Bank is looking to actually, well, possibly from what we saw last week in Janet Yellen's information, possibly by the end of the year, going to be looking at a very small, measured, and as she had described it, a elongated period of rate increases, normalization of rates, and that hopefully will do well to keep things going the way they are in terms of the growth that we're seeing right now. There was a couple of different stories last week. I don't know if you caught them, about how GDP is being measured incorrectly. There's an abnormal seasonality in the first quarter of the year, and that's causing a lot of problems in trying to come up with the second quarter, because obviously there's such a lag involved. And all of a sudden, some of the news media caught on to this, saying, hey, for the last 30 years or something like that, the first quarter is unusually weak and the second quarter is unusually strong. And that's on the seasonally adjusted numbers. Why not try to figure out what is causing this problem and to better average out what the real numbers are, so there's less confusion about weakness in the first quarter? Now, of course, that comes on a time when we're seeing that first quarter GDP is pretty darn ugly. The hope for a recovery in the second quarter. So what they're going to do is already they seem to have found out, well, you know, now that you mention it, yeah, there is something wrong. So the official government numbers are going to start seeing adjustments very soon. And they're going to have that in the second quarter. And going back, I think it was five years or so, they're going to adjust all the numbers backwards and to give a better comparative from one quarter over the next and year over year, so we can see what that is more appropriately. But Janet Yellen did steal the show twice last week with the minutes that came out, as well as speeches she made on Friday. And of course, Mario Draghi was talking about how, well, you know what, the situation with bonds here that we're seeing recently, well, it's probably not going to last too long, because we are going to have more of a bond buying going on during times when you may not expect it. And there was a speaker from the ECB that came out and talked about how they're going to be front loading some of the bond purchases, whatever that means. And if you translate that the way I think it, what I think it means is simply that there is going to be a bond buying that goes on. And if in fact the markets start to go against what the ECB is doing, they're not going to have any of that. They're trying to maintain their control. We did see that major bond route, the move from about 0.05% on the German Bund. That was the low point about a month and a half ago, up to about 0.75. And after the comment from the ECB, there was a major move in the opposite direction, with the realization that many are going to get their heads handed to them if you try to go against an unlimited money supply with the ECB and their ability to purchase more and more bonds. no matter what is the case, no matter how low the price is in terms of relative yield, or how low the yield is, I should say, kind of you always got to think backwards here, how low the yield is in terms of price, and more importantly, even if there is negative yield, which means that you have to pay to actually buy the bonds, you lose money when you buy the bonds, so you're going to pay up on them. That being the case, a lot of people that were betting against the continuation of the bond rally said, you know what, I'm not doing this. That's kind of nutty. So we did see a reversal in treasuries last week with the dollar starting to move back up again against the euro and definitely against the yen. And that caused a lot of jubilation around the markets in terms of the fixed income market and stock markets. We're going to talk about a few things after we get to our guest. I do want to bring our guest on early. This is one of the more fascinating discussions that I think we're going to have because this topic of automated vehicles, driverless vehicles, robotics, artificial intelligence, and all sorts of other concepts that are derived from this is something that really is, I think, going to be one of the bigger discussions over the next period of time. And our special guest today is Paul Godsmark. He is the co-founder and chief technology officer for the Canadian Automated Vehicles Center of Excellence and located in Canada, of course. Paul, how are you?
Very good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
I have so many questions for you because obviously this whole area of automated vehicles and driverless vehicles or semi-automatic and fully automatic is really becoming a very big topic of conversation, as you know, obviously.
So I guess
let's just start out with where we are in the big picture in terms of where driverless, fully driverless automobiles is in terms of time and, you know, actuality.
Okay, so you've got the automakers on one hand, the traditional incumbents in this space. They're all developing vehicles with increasing levels of automation. They're talking about a vehicle that will be able to drive itself basically from highway, freeway on-ramp to freeway off-ramp, maybe end of this year, 2016, 2017, with much higher levels of automation around 2020 and possibly fully self-driving 2025. And then you've got companies like Google and other autonomous vehicle developers out of left field. And Google appear to be leading the way, and they're saying that they will have something in public hands if they hit their targets by 2020.
Wow.
Yeah.
So right now there is semi-automatic. Let's kind of get to some definitions here. The semi-automatic, and that is a lot, that's on the road right now, right?
That's right. We've got what we call ADAS, Advanced Driver Assistance Systems, and they're being introduced more and more onto, you know, the vehicles that are being sold on the forecourts, and features are slowly being introduced. But I think it's important not to confuse those features with the secret sauce that's needed to make the vehicle self-driving. And I don't think the automakers are going to get us there as they say they will on this incremental approach. It requires the secret sauce that that no one has yet.
What is the secret sauce?
Well, the secret sauce is actually having a decision-making system within the vehicle that makes really good decisions.
Well, that's me.
Yeah. Normally, that's you or I.
That's in my household, too.
Yeah, but we need something in our vehicle that's just going to make these good decisions all the time. And right now, the technology is getting close, but we talk about the six nines. You need 99.9999% accuracy and precision to get this right. And every single nine is an order of magnitude harder to achieve. So it's still quite a bit of a journey to go to get there.
Now, will it be better when we have a situation that where, for example, there are less non-automated on the roads? So right now, let's just say at the moment, there's none, okay?
Yeah.
Well, let's say when it's 50%. Is there more accidents potentially going to happen if we have 50-50? Or, you know, is it sort of like once we get to that magic number that every single car is fully automated, that all of a sudden accidents go away and problems go away, decision-making becomes easier?
Okay. So I see where you're coming with this question. And the actual answer is the suboptimal part of this equation is the human driver. Yeah,
exactly.
And so all the time you've got human drivers on the road, we have to make the autonomous vehicle system less efficient to accommodate for us error-prone humans. So you actually have people like Eric Garcetti, mayor of LA. He said he wants Los Angeles to have the first driverless car neighborhood in the world. And I've at Cavco, we've been developing the concept of autonomous vehicle zones. And that there is something to be said for getting rid of human drivers as soon as possible to make the whole system safer. But the autonomous vehicles won't make it less safe for human drivers. They'll just make less mistakes.
Yeah, it's funny because I've always thought that every time I'm on the road, I've thought about, hey, man, we should get rid of all these drivers. You know, they're really bad. Is this going to be kind of like what we've seen in the Minority Report or the Johnny Cab in Total Recall? You know, if you remember any of those movies?
Well, initially, no, nothing like it. I mean, I've been for a ride in the Google car. It's driven me around, and it's just remarkable that it is so unremarkable.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
It's just like having a chauffeur.
Yeah.
You just forget about the driving task, and you do what you want to do.
You read a newspaper, you make a coffee, you have a little coffee maker in there. What about cocktails?
That's it. I mean, I'm on a forum online and we spent some time thinking about what we get up to. And I'll just try and put it this way. If, in the past, when you talked about going to the movies and what you did at the movies, the kids in these vehicles will be doing it on the way to the movies. They'll get to see the film.
Oh, there you go. Wow. That's interesting. All right. So I have a lot of questions here. So first of all, one of the things that I was thinking about is the whole idea of driverless automobiles. And this is a big report you put out, or at least a report that I'm reading. You put this one out, right? The Conference Board of – this is the Conference Board of Canada.
That's right. We co-authored that
okay.
one, yeah.
So this one was really neat because – and obviously you're dealing with this in Canada. I thought it was really – not to bang on Canada, but how they start out the whole conversation about how many things Canada missed in terms of technology and things over the years. And it was like, they should have hopped on that one. Oh, yeah, they should have hopped on that one, too. And then we look at the rise and fall, for example, of BlackBerry. But what's interesting is that BlackBerry owns a company, and one of the things that is really part and parcel of a very big part of the driverless automation is software. And a company called QNX, which is a division or, part of BlackBerry, is leading the way in a lot of this, right?
It is. QNX, I mean, I don't know the statistics, but QNX provide very robust software that is in the majority of cars that leave production lines today. They're very much in this space, and they're a company very worth watching.
So, okay, now, here's some other things that I thought was interesting. Let's see, I have so many questions. We mentioned Google. We hear Apple, GM, companies like Mobileye, Tesla. These the names that you're hearing all the time?
Absolutely. In terms of investment, those names are all the ones that rise to the top. But I would give warning that, I talked to her earlier about the secret sauce.
Yeah.
You can invest in companies that are doing the incremental stuff, this transition. But if they don't make it to the secret sauce, their ability, to sell to the market will significantly reduce when whoever does introduce the autonomous vehicle first. It's going to be a bit like operating systems and how Microsoft cornered the market for a number of years with Windows. I can see a large player getting to market first with the self-driving vehicle operating system and cornering the market. And if you don't play ball with them, your investment could go down in value. So there's so many ways this could play out.
So here a couple of things that I thought were really neat. You said essentially autonomous vehicles are going to transform society. And I thought that was really interesting. And I started thinking about what could those things be? What is going to be the fact? All right, it's great that I can read my paper finally and I could text while driving or text within my car. But I also realized that there's something, as we've coined many years ago, called consumption cannibalism, and this is a little bit different, that with all the robotics that are out there, one of the things that happens is, for example, take an Amazon warehouse, whereas they used to have pickers that would pull the things off the shelves and would sort it and then, you know, put it together and get it ready for shipping, et cetera. Well, a lot of that these days is done robotically, right?
Yeah.
So if you take just that one scenario and you look at, okay, well, no longer do they need that person, that one person that was in charge of taping the boxes, as an example. Well, that one person no longer needs to have health benefits. That's good. Well, the cost of things may change. But yet that person also used to do things like shower and use soap. They also eat. They also vacation. There's all these things that happen, and no longer do we need that person there and then expand this whole thing. You know, toll takers on the roads, for example, or copy clerks, or there's a whole host of people are no longer necessary to run the world. And therefore, the fact is that unemployment could really be in a cyclical, we can have a cyclical change, a very societal change in the whole employment scheme. Now, I would say that, well, of course, then we have technology and the need for many people in the industry to be building these kinds of things and coming up with these ideas. And, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago, maybe the driverless automobile wasn't even a thought, and now it's an industry. So I get that. But one of the things that you wrote was really fascinating in terms of this, and I'm just going to mention this and then we'll talk about it. But the total benefits to Canada, you mentioned, is about $65 billion per year.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be collision avoidance, hopefully, $37 billion. Time value, about $20 billion, which is obviously a big savings. Fuel cost, about $2.5 billion. Congestion avoidance, $5 billion, and maybe a few other things. But one of the things a couple pages later in this report you mentioned, and this is really fascinating, is the direct employment displacement. And you included things like transport, truck, and courier services, about 560,000 people in Canada alone. Taxi drivers and chauffeurs, 50,000. You have bus drivers, auto body repair, auto insurance, traffic police, road safety professionals, trauma surgeons, which is kind of interesting, critical care health staff, medical staff, legal, obviously not, you don't need all those lawyers, you know, running around because it won't be as many car accidents. Chiropractors probably could be out of business, legal staff, et cetera. Now, what's really interesting here is, and you have things like also that maybe cars are driving more efficiently. There's not as much wear and tear on the tires or the rubber industry. You could really kind of expand this out to all sorts of areas that are interesting. Bus companies may be out of business, limos, maybe, you know, the way we see limo companies are out of business. You know, who knows if the drive-through restaurant has to make changes and things like that. You know, you can possibly, you know, could send your car to get it done for you. That's kind of weird. You know, you kind of have a tray that comes out. You say, you know, you program in your iPhone, you say, hey, car, go get me a quarter pounder. And the car goes off. I mean, is that ever going to be a day where the cars are just more like, you know, personless shuttles?
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. Automation has been creeping in the whole time. And this autonomous vehicles are on the scale of the internet. Okay, and I try and tell people autonomous vehicles are like a physical internet. And they are going to massively change society. They're going to massively change our jobs. I reckon that, you know, maybe 5% of jobs will be directly impacted, and possibly 20% will be indirectly impacted. You know, in how we do our jobs, in the need for our jobs. And then the autonomous vehicle would just be the thin end of the wedge on autonomous robots that are going to basically start doing all of the manual work for us. And this is why whenever you really get deep into autonomous vehicles and what they mean, the subject of basic income comes up. And this is a concept that's gaining a lot of traction around the globe. And it's basically that government will pay you a minimum wage, even if you're not working, just because it's better. It actually costs less money to pay you that than you get into this whole welfare system. So many jobs are going to disappear. And we estimated that the money flows around autonomous vehicles could be equivalent to 20% of GDP. Land value is going to change massively. Property values.
Trains and things like that. But wait, let's just go backwards for a second. When you said that incomes are going to change in GDP by 20%.
Yeah.
Is that a downward revision?
No, it's money flows. So money flow equivalent to 20% of GDP.
I gotcha.
So, you know, say for instance, land values at the moment, you know, the reason people, we have sprawl, that people live out in the suburbs and the exurbs, is because, you know, often the cost of housing towards the city centre, nearer the jobs and everything, is too pricey. Well, the autonomous vehicle is going to change that balance, because if you can start your working day the moment you get in the car, and if you can end it when you, the moment you get out the car, then suddenly you're willing to accommodate a much longer travel distance, which changes the cost of the land value where you live. So that's one example. And yet in city centres, you know, downtown parking, in some cities, you look at them from an aerial view, up to 25-30% of the land of that city is given over to parking. And if we don't need to park these vehicles, and some
what do you
studies...
Do? You send them back home?
Yeah, well, you can send it back home, but the thing is, you won't actually want to own it anymore. You'll be better off not owning a vehicle. You'll just have this Uber-like system on steroids, where you use your smart device, you call up the vehicle, it comes to you within 2 minutes, you go to where you want to go, and if you're willing to share a ride, it costs even less. You'll have paid electronically when you call the vehicle up, or you have some like monthly retainer, or, you know, your monthly payment plan, and then the vehicle drops you off, and then it goes on and gets the next ride.
So this is Johnny Cab.
This is Johnny Cab type system. you know, Uber is the fastest growing surface transportation trend. You know, the Uber type model. And the autonomous vehicle is the perfect complement to that.
So now, do we have companies that are going to be... So does Uber theoretically change from a ride-sharing / taxi service with a driver that is decentralized and not employed by the company, right, to ownership of fleets, or even a company that is funded... But like, say, okay, yeah, I'm gonna buy 20 cars, and I'm gonna lease them out to you know, and I'm gonna get paid for it by transportation. It's kind of like an apartment complex.
Yeah.
I'll buy a big, you know,
all of those companies. Oh boy, for instance, companies are gonna have to have access to fleets of these vehicles so that they can drive their employees around. Because what health and safety requires that the company always has their employees use the safest route possible. Well, if autonomous vehicles are safer than them driving their own cars, they're going to have to use autonomous vehicles. You can have, say, a kid going to college. At the moment, they buy a vehicle for 4 years, it depreciates in value. If they buy an autonomous vehicle, the 95% of the time that it's sitting idle, they could hire it out, say, through Uber or some other cloud company, and they could actually get a return on investment at the end of their 4 years after college. So all of their transportation would have been paid for.
So now, if in fact cars do sit idle for 90% or some very large percent of the time in a garage or in your driveway, it would seem to me that if they were fully optimized and used on a regular basis for transportation, that one of the big issues there is that there would be less cars on the road in terms of, or less cars owned. I should say it that way. Less cars, it could be a lot of cars on the road.
Definitely. There's an OECD report came out recently. I think they're slightly too optimistic. They've said that we can reduce the number of vehicles on the road by 90%.
90?
I think it's more like 80%. But it's a huge reduction. Even in peak hours at the moment, the most vehicles on the roads is about 20% of the total vehicle fleet.
Wow.
Okay. So there's this huge, I mean, it's, I think, Brian, is it Jonas of Morgan Stanley summed it up recently. He said the automotive sector is the most disruptable sector there is at the moment. And it's because we've got the most underutilized asset that we're all sitting on that's just depreciating in value. And as Klanik of Uber summed it up, he said, I'm going to make using Uber so cheap that you won't want to own your car anymore.
And buses are a thing of the past.
Well, yeah, buses, even mass transit, it's only in the most heavily congested corridors is transit going to survive unscathed? Everywhere else, buses, LRT, transit, don't go investing in that until someone's done the due diligence and can tell you that the operational and business model is safe for the next 20 years.
Now, what about privacy? You know, one of the concerns is, you know, you have these vehicles, and let's go through the Uber model for a second, and let's make it the Uber automated model, okay?
Yeah.
No drivers, just get in a car and you scurry along. Now, I called this thing up on my smartphone, and somewhere it's recorded where I've been and where I'm going, right?
Yeah.
Right now, I get in my car, and I'm under the radar, so to speak. Not that I'm hiding anything, but let's just, you know, let's talk about it. You know, I'm going to get some ice cream. I'm going somewhere. All of a sudden now, in a way, that information can be tracked. Let's say again, let's go on the outskirts and say that, you know, for criminal activity, you know, you no longer want to be in a car, which is good. This is a good thing, actually, you know, because, you know, you could be found out that where you went and the proof of your existence in that particular area. But is this an issue in terms of privacy, that the information can be collected and it will be collected? It's just a fact. It will be collected somewhere. The question is how it's used is another question.
Well, Uber already collecting all of that data on you. Taxi companies could as well. But I tell you, we haven't even really in our discussions touched on the biggest data and privacy issue. And that is that these autonomous vehicles are sensors on wheels. Literally everything within sight of the street, the road where these vehicles is traveling, they are picking up real-time data on everything that's going on. And the value of that data is unbelievable. And so whoever owns the fleets of those vehicles, so for instance, you could be walking down the street and you know, you've got your route to work once you've parked your car or something. Over a course of a few months, vehicles will be able to monitor you and work out exactly who you are without using facial recognition software, because you're a certain height, you're a certain size, you've got a certain way of walking, your gait, the way you walk is very distinguishable. So people will be able to work out who you are. And so if you say you normally go to drink at Starbucks, but today you're walking by Second Cup and you're looking and think, oh, Second Cup have got an offer. Once the vehicles have seen that, they've sent the information back, you could have an algorithm running saying, oh, hold on, you know, we've got to get this guy, make him an offer so that he doesn't stop at Second Cup, but he comes along to Starbucks. It's just the amount of data that we can pick up from the street scene is incredible. And that really concerns me. It's data heaven and it's data hell.
Yeah, so, no, that's exactly right. I mean, really, I'm thinking of all the negatives when it comes to, you know, where everybody knows what's going on. Who knows if Starbucks pays the drivers ever so slight more amount of money to take the route that has the four Starbucks on the road and not the Dunkin' Donuts or the Second Cup. Or I guess, what's the big one up in Canada? What's the big breakfast?
Tim Hortons.
Tim Hortons, yes. It's like our Denny's, I guess, in a way.
Yeah. But there's a good side to this as well. So, for instance, say you're putting on weight. These systems will be able to tell you, no, you're putting on weight. If you develop a slight limp, these systems will be able to tell you. It could be an early diagnosis for many medical ailments.
So all I need is somebody else telling me that I'm gaining weight. That's all I need, okay? You know what I mean?
But I'm just telling you, it opens up a Pandora's box, and it could be a can of worms, but it's opening up so many possibilities. And just to come back to something you mentioned earlier about jobs going away, just like the internet, who could have thought 15, 20 years ago that social media would be so huge that so many people would be employed in this sector? So the autonomous vehicle is going to open up so many new business models, you know, things that we haven't even thought of yet. So, the future is ours to create. You know, we can imagine the future into being. And everything's up for grabs right now.
Now, the thing is that people wouldn't have to learn how to drive. And what happens, I guess, if a car breaks down, you just get another car that comes up to you, no problem. In the future, the absolute future is no steering wheel, no hands on, no nothing. I mean, it would just be voice activation or some kind of computer logic, some kind of entry. You know what? I decide I'm not going to 5 Elm Street. Let me take me to, you know, 22 Capitol Avenue. you know, switch gears. This is kind of like, you know, where we are today in mathematics, where, you know, I kind of look at it as the abacus to excel, right? So in the old days, you and I don't know how old you are, but I had to learn how to do math and long division. Now, do I use long division today? No. If I had to use long division, could I do it? Struggling, I could probably have to do it, right? You know, I mean, right now we use Excel, we use calculators, we use our smartphones and all sorts of things to do very advanced things. Now, one of the interesting questions is going to be, you know, does that take away anything? I mean, I'm not quite sure. You know, it's just maybe it's something that we had to learn in the 1900s and we're just letting it go. It's like an appendage is no longer necessary.
Well, that's it. I mean, how many people ride a horse and know how to ride a horse? I've got a photo of New York's Fifth Avenue in the year 1900, and there's one automobile, and the street is packed. I've got another photo in 1913, and you can't find any horses.
Hmm.
Okay, so yeah, things are going to change. You know, we're not going to be able to drive anymore, but we'll have more time to look at YouTube videos.
Oh, that's always good. Or very great. And spend on social media. So is there any, we talk about the good. So we know that this would be a good thing and it's obviously good, but on the other hand, it's going to displace a lot of people. Will there be more people in your estimation displaced from jobs because of this? You know, and by the way, does this mean that I can't speed anymore? I mean, I can't take my car down. Obviously I don't have a car, but if I want to get to work faster. What do you say? You know, I really need to go faster here. No, it's all limited, right?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the thing that people are going to find really annoying is that once we've got to about 5% market penetration of these autonomous vehicles and they're not speeding or not going above the acceptable speeding limit, then they're actually going to slow all the other traffic down. Because once you have enough vehicles doing the speed limit in a very congested system, that they control.
Well, the big question I have is, you know, how does traffic start? I've always wondered this, haven't you? So you're driving down the road and everything is just peachy. Everything is moving just fine. And theoretically, you add cars to the whole equation and really you shouldn't slow down. You should be moving just like you were moving. But somebody somewhere put the brakes on. I'm not talking about accident here. I'm just talking about somehow congestion starts. And that just starts an entire domino effect that just slows everybody down. I would assume that when we go to this, when it gets to the point of 100% autonomous, that I would think that speed limits would be increased. Or not speed limits, but the speed at which you traveled would increase.
Yeah, so, that's up to us as society to allow that. There's a huge anti-car movement at the moment, particularly in cities and promoting transit for a very good reason, because, you know, cars just make our cities almost uninhabitable. We don't have walkable cities. You know, we're all putting on weight. We're all suffering from this. So we need to put good policies in place to control the speeds, to control where these vehicles go, and we need to make communities and that more livable. And I think this technology is actually a great tool that will allow that. It's not just a car. And by the way, we've just talked about cars, but we deliberately called ourselves, you know, around autonomous vehicles. And we could, for instance, have sidewalk-friendly deliver bots. You know, your pizza could be delivered by a small suitcase-sized vehicle that just is happy on the sidewalk. There's Baidu in China, that's Google's equivalent, they're developing autonomous bicycles. So you could have the bicycle delivered to you, you cycle it where you want to go, you get rid of it, and it cycles itself off to the next person.
So somehow this is a two-wheeler that manages to stay up without anybody on it?
Well, that's right. It just uses gyroscopic stabilization, just like the Segway. Yeah.
Getting a little bit far. I mean, there's so many other things. I mean, then you have an entire kind of, you know, industry that's built around this whole thing. For example, you know, some kind of a refreshment dispenser, Green Mountain Keurig coffee pod thing. Bring your own pods, stick it in the car, and you get coffee.
Businesses. So, for instance, so let's just say, take the example of a dentist. You know, I'm a dentist. I want to work in the downtown area, but the cost of rent is prohibitive. I could literally have an autonomous vehicle. I could put my equipment in the back of it, and I could just go and visit, say, businesses, and I could become a dentist visiting a business.
So you have like a dental vent.
So you put your business into the autonomous vehicle, and you know, and then you avoid the high rates, and you go to where your customers are, and they will love the convenience. You know, who wants to take a 20-minute journey each way to their dentist from work if the dentist can save them 40 minutes by just coming to them?
I can think of so many different things. I mean, there's so many different possible things that would actually
retailers.
Why
can't a retailer come to you? Why do you have to go to the retailer? And do you know Amazon have got a patent? And it's basically 3D printing, so additive printing. And they want to basically put the printer in a truck. And when you order something, the truck will be on its way to you and printing it as it comes. And, of course, with autonomous vehicles, you've removed all of the labor element from that. So you've cut the cost down to a minimum. It's a brave new world.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of all the possible things. You know, you're getting into a point now. I'm starting to think Terminator here. You know, I mean, I know we have a lot of movie reference, but, you know, listen, Star Trek, a lot of things came true, right?
Absolutely.
But, you know, I'm starting to think of all these movie references, and you have, like, the Terminator where machines took over. And really, if you start thinking about all the things you're mentioning here, you know, why not just have an automated backhoe? I think you mentioned somewhere there's a – you mentioned something here in your piece about some of the current automated things that are available right now, right? Like, for example, you know, why not just have an the Roomba, right? Isn't that an automated vacuum cleaner?
Yeah.
I mean, automated lawnmower, an automated, just keeps on going the whole, I mean, as long as it stays on the ground. I mean, it just keeps on going and going. What are we going to do? We're just going to talk about getting fat. Yeah, we're just going to sit and eat chips all day and just have them delivered to us by the bucket loads.
Yeah, it's what was that? Is that the Wall-E movie? As I say, it's up to us. It's our future. We are developing automation that takes away the need to do dangerous and dirty jobs and anything that's drudgery. We're removing that. We're removing the need to do manual work, but we need to be creative about what we replace it with.
I got to tell you something. There's I'm all for replacing manual work. One of the things that's probably going to be really interesting for people to look for is when you start seeing a really big upswell of individuals that are protesting technology, and we start having these organizations that are like, you know, hate humans against technology evolution. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, right? Some kind of these groups and things that's going to be an interesting sign that we are much closer than further away, because these are going to be the signs that this is right around the corner and it's going to get, and I venture to say, by the way, and I wonder if you agree, Paul, that once we get this going, the uptake and the movement of technology is happening at breakneck speed right now. And yes. and once that we get over that hump where there is a not the acceptance, by the way, but the actual ability of the automobile and other things to do these kind of things on a 99.999% accuracy basis. I mean, that's going to be everything. You know, you're going to see all sorts of things. You know, right now, a little bit, I can, from my office or from my house, from wherever I want, I can adjust my thermostat. I can check my alarm system. Yeah. I could, you know, all these things are talk about the Internet of Things that Cisco talks about. This is kind of the hands-off approach of non-human, decision-making or non-human intervention, which again could be good and bad, I guess. So fascinating subject and I appreciate it. We'll put all the information and this report, if I can do so, on the show notes from this episode. And you can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com and check it out. Paul Godsmark from the Canadian Automated Vehicle Center of Excellence. Great discussion and quite mind-blowing, frankly. I appreciate you being here.
Thanks very much, Andrew.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, if that wasn't one of the coolest discussions that really makes you think about what the possibilities are, I don't know what is. Think about all the companies and all the people, the economies, the dollars involved, the jobs, the changes in the way that we do things, do business, relate to the whole idea of travel. Think about the dynamic of how that changes everything. And the companies that are involved in this and how they're either going to be making it or breaking it, frankly, if they don't make it right. The whole idea of transportation no longer being relegated to the point of having to do it yourself and allowing for it to be just, you know, pick me up, take me somewhere, and the ability for me to get things done while I'm actually driving around and if I'm actually moving around, that's pretty amazing. Think about that. Think of the power of that. Well, just as I mentioned, just to kind of throw these companies out at you one more time, we have BlackBerry, which has the QNX. We have Apple, GM, Mobileye, Google, Tesla. And then you have all the other companies that are involved in the chip making for this that will be powering much of the sensors, the cameras. So really, there's a whole realm of companies that are involved in this, and the ability for us to potentially profit, I think, is pretty significant. So take a listen to all the names again that we talked about throughout this discussion. Also on the show notes for the Disciplined Investor podcast for this episode, there is that story, that commentary and research paper that was co-authored by Paul, which we talked about earlier. Very interesting. I mean, fascinating, with some pictures and some things to look at, as well as some statistics that are, I think, extremely important to look at and understand. Well, just let's segue real quickly into a couple other very quick topics. I mentioned earnings season and the S&P 500. We have the official numbers. We ended up a little bit shy of the averages historically in terms of earnings. Usually we see about close to at least 70% of companies beating expectations. Now, remember something, as we've talked about before, this quarter in particular, a lot of the companies that were reporting had already guided down pretty significantly, and analysts had also taken down their numbers. So now that we're seeing only a 60% beat rate, which is far below historical numbers and averages, I think that's something that we need to be aware of. Earnings also are big there, but the revenues just as short in terms of the actual numbers that came out. The other thing I want to talk about is, I mentioned this on DH Unplugged. There's something odd going on with the company Yelp. Y-E-L-P is the actual symbol. One of the things that we noticed was they had a horrible report that came in. There's some question about their reviews and the authenticity of those reviews. There is some discussion about their strong-arming many of their customers, their revenue model. And then at the same time, when this earnings came out, stock dropped just a heap of it. A week later, there was a magical buyer, or at least the company was entertaining some bids or thinking about selling itself. Something was going on there. The stock rallied really well. And that's what came time to start looking a little bit deeper into what was going on. One of the big things that I think I mentioned on DH Unplugged and I've talked about is that management is selling shares like crazy. Now, some of it is on what we call planned sales automatic. So the company or the managers or the insiders are not actually going and saying, okay, sell now. What's happening, these are systematic, planned, and predispositions that they have. But you know what? When you see that the CEO is selling 8,000 shares a week, CFO is selling, COO is selling on a regular basis in large numbers, that is a big concern. Now, mind you, one of the big things they say is that insider buying is oftentimes a very good indicator of something going on that's good with the company. Insider sales, not so much of a good indicator, not as well correlated to the actual price of the stock. But I'll tell you something. With all the shenanigans that's gone on with this, and when you look at the actual model of Yelp, the competitors, what's going on internally of the company, the historical earnings growth, which is slowing down dramatically, the various things that are written about them, the various cases that are being waged against them in terms of their customer base, some of the things that are related to the extremely poor service. Again, this is from some of the research that I'm reading. There is something to be said about this and something that's very concerning. I think that this is very important to look into and to consider. Now, we took a small short position last week on the company. I actually also put it on the DH Unplugged game. If you haven't been following that, You can go over to dhunplugged.com and see what's going on there. But I think that this is very interesting that this is all coming together. And then on top of it, with the fact that we have this planned sale going on, magically out of just absolutely out of a hat, there's a sale that can't be corroborated anywhere. And we cannot find anything other than the fact that there is some kind of consideration to this idea. What I think, very simple. The company is trying to make sure that the share price stays up as the executives are selling. That's simple, right? Doesn't that make sense? So take a look at Yelp. I think there'll be a lot of volatility here, because I think the company will continue on this. But in the long run, I think this is a doomed model overall. Let's get to a question. I received this through Twitter, and I thought it was kind of interesting. You follow me at Andrew Horowitz, one word. This is from Don. And he said, thanks for the podcast. Great podcast. He says, any chance you could discuss the XTN, which is the transportation sector or ETF? With the S&P at all-time highs, why do the rails and trucking lag, and what might this mean? And a few people kind of chimed in on this also. I said that I would talk about this. Somebody mentioned, Dave, I mentioned, and especially with gas and diesel relatively cheap to the oil glut, rigging, riding on rails, etc. So here's some of the discussion. This is important. First of all, we had the high prices of oil, right? We had, or at least the relatively high price of oil some time ago. Basically, what was happening there was that we were hoping that many of the airlines were hedged well, but then oil started dropping. And as oil started dropping, many of the airlines did very well, because a major component of their overall cost for the company to do business is simply the fact that they have to buy fuel. Now, we did see that the airlines did very, very well, and there was a small uptick in some of the companies that were doing deliveries, et cetera. But then all of a sudden, we saw the trains and the rails and major transportation ex airlines start to lag very significantly. If you look at the earnings last couple of quarters from Norfolk Southern and CSX and a few other ones, you saw that there was a real problem. Because as oil prices were coming down, and as there was a lack of demand for oil, which is a big component of what rails will transport, and the fact that we were seeing much less overall manufacturing going on, slowdown in GDP, the rails and transport really got hurt. Now, you would think that the truck lines, for example, would actually hold up better as oil prices came down. But because of the slowdown, and this is a major insider look, if you will, into what's happening with the economy, this is real time. It's real time that we know that trucking is slowing down, at least in terms of overall tonnage and deliveries, et cetera. We see that the rails are having a lot of trouble because of coal and oil. And on top of that, then you had oil start moving back up. When oil started moving back up, all of a sudden the airlines started getting a kick in the pants, right? It was really not so good for them compared to where they were. This big move that we saw, what do we see? About a 50% move in oil in the last couple of months, in the last 10 or 11 weeks. We've seen that oil has been tracking higher each and every week, even though total inventories, have not really come down from their height. A little bit, maybe a million barrels from the top, but still, if you count them all up, not much of a change. Even though rigs have come down, the rig count has come down, even though that some production has come down, the fact of the matter is we still have a lot of oil. And what's happened now is you have a speculation on the fact that there's going to be a major slowdown in development, production, refining, etc. Not all that's happened. Gas prices on average have gone back up. Oil has gone back up, not reflective in the fundamentals necessarily of oil. But then again, you have hedge funds that really take a position and move the needle quite significantly. But when you take all of this into consideration, when you look at and step back for a second, look at what happened with a slowdown in GDP, slowdown in manufacturing, slowdown, therefore, in transportation, oil prices coming down, oil production coming down, and the fact that as oil production is coming down, it may help prices, but it's not going to help the rails because the transport of the actual supply is not needed as much because the demand is down, on top of the fact that we have a tremendous amount of inventories. And then when you see the oil price come back up due to speculation, of course, we see that the input price of that inside of maybe trucking and airlines is a big component. Therefore, those move down. So now you have the whole batch of transportation weak And this is something that doesn't really happen that often when you see this kind of major divergence with the transports and the industrials, as we've seen recently. It's not usually a very good sign, but a lot of people will look at it and just say, ah, what the hell? And you see the S&P 500 making new highs. You see the Dow getting close to new highs, even though a lot of the transportation and the overall index, the sub-index and the index of transportation stocks and related are not doing well at all. Now, is it temporary? It's possible. Will companies come back if there's going to be a little bit of a tick higher in GDP, manufacturing, retail, et cetera? Yeah, but we're not seeing that yet. Is it the canary in the coal mine? Possibly. But we have to see a lot more companies do a lot worse. And we are starting to see a lot of that. As we mentioned at the top of this discussion, about 60% of companies have beat earnings. That is a low number. And many of them are guiding down due to the fact that obviously there's dollar headwinds and they're seeing a global slowdown overall. So the answer to your question, hopefully I got to the points that were necessary to give you a better insight of what's happening here. The big question, and that's really, I think, underlying your question to begin with, is, you know, what does this mean for the bigger picture and bigger market picture? I think that there is so much enthusiasm over biotechs and technology, real estate, for that matter, interest sensitive. There's also tremendous buybacks that are going on in the markets that right now it is not anything more than something to keep a watch on. But you know what? The fact is that, you know, when you see one thing fall like this and a major component where it deals with the economy, you have to realize that maybe you're going to see some softness in retail and related consumer staples as well coming forward. So hopefully that answered your question. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you enjoyed your Labor Day or are about to enjoy your Labor Day. Go out and have a barbecue, sit by the pool, enjoy yourself. Thanks for joining me. If you have any questions, send it to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And of course, visit us on thedisciplinedinvestor.com on Twitter and listen to us on DH Unplugged. Tuesday evenings, we're going to do it live on Periscope again. Thanks for joining me. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented that should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.